Yeah, the late Mac Miller and Blue World. That was the lead single of the late rapper's posthumous album Circles, released on January 17th, almost a year after his death. You're locked into The Pulse, where I bring you the latest indie music world and fresh new music. You have Daryl and Othniel, and today's story is in relation, related to that previous song. You know, in today's age of social media, fans get to be personal and up close with the artists, peeking into their everyday lives. People are now more closely connected than ever before, and with that, the hunger for music releases following an artist's passing is on the rise. Latest example, of course, was that Mac Miller.
Yep.
The album Circles was handled with care by the Miller estate, the Miller family, and longtime collaborator John Bryan. Upon its release, Circles made waves across the industry. And the family, the Miller family, almost created a new way of releasing a posthumous album. They kind of refined the promotions of a late artist's work. How did they do it differently? It's pretty interesting. You see these days when an artist dies and a posthumous album is released, the promotions are everywhere, right? The marketing, the billboards, the ads, what have you. Mac Miller, on the other hand, though, his estate just posted one message on the late rapper's Instagram page announcing and sharing details of the project. And as a result, and comparing it with, you know, how the other people do it, the sentiment over this release was much more different than the others. It was a lot more heartfelt, no frills, nothing extravagant to market the album, which usually equates to, you know, taking the meaning and vulnerability from the work. By doing this, they purely sought to make their message public, expressing gratitude for the support of listeners throughout this difficult process. On a human level, and especially for me, it portrayed that Mac Miller was like one of us, right? This is human after all.
For me, normally with those kind of albums, there's always the impression that the estate of the late artist wants to, you know, make a quick buck from what they can and what there's left to you know, to take from him. But with the Mac Miller album, it feels genuine.
Yes.
It feels like it was an album for the fans that really miss him and really want to hear more music.
And if you listen to the whole album in its entirety, it's almost very drony. It's almost very sentimental, right? So it's like songs he kept in the vault for a long time.
It's something for the fans to really like cherish and like to, you know, I'm sure there are still fans that are very sad. So
of
like
course.
Listening to that, you know, in that tone, because it would probably be a bit tone deaf if the songs were very dancey.
After he passed away, video tributes were posted by lots of fans after his death on YouTube and what have you, celebrating him as a person, not solely as a musician. Among the tributes that the family put out saw a resurgence of interviews with Mac Miller, compilations of his funniest moments, footage illustrating his career as a growing young artist. What the Miller family also understood and took into account was the dynamic between Mac Miller and his fans. They released various video clips of the album, documenting personal footage of him in the studio dancing, footage of him playing many different instruments, to even the type of Van shoes he wears all the time. What they did was they provided symbolic content that assures fans that the tribute is coming from the right place and that he is getting the respect he deserves. As most of the times, and I'm sure you've noticed this too, but posthumous albums are record labels' way of, like you say, you know, estate cashing in, but I think more than that is the labels that are trying to, especially if they own the music, right? They're trying to
squeeze out every last bit of like juice they have left.
Exactly. Usually, the record labels especially, they will cobble together scraps that the artist has discarded, which can be compared to publishing a novelist's earliest draft.
Yeah,
right?
Sometimes it's just like the early takes or the demos. Sometimes it's just the rehearsals. Like
exactly.
I think in the case of Love Never Felt So Good, I think what they had to work with is just a demo that was a very rough recording of Michael Jackson and a pianist at the piano. But you could hear that it wasn't meant to be out in the open, but
sure,
that's
in a commercial
all they
space.
Had to work with.
Given, you know, of that, there are fans that are actually wanting to hear, you know, this kind of early sketches and work. That aside though, it made me wonder about the rising success of posthumous albums over the recent years and how it's not just going to be a fad today. The challenge right now is finding creative ways is to reach fans that aligns with the artists. Mac Miller's Circles has kind of opened new ways of promotion, in my opinion. Looking back in the history of posthumous albums, a whole host of late artists such as Amy Winehouse, Marvin Gaye, Janis Joplin all top charts after their death. Tupac and Notorious B.I.G., Biggie have released more music in death than they have in life. However, for me personally, I'm the of the opinion that an artist or slash musician's legacy and history should be left as it is. There's no way to find out if the final product is what the late artist intended to release, and thus I feel that's kind of disrespectful, right? Mm. To publish their work when they are gone and cannot work on it themselves.
They have no say whether they like it or not.
They have
not,
no freedom right? at all, right? Lil Peep, who passed away in 2017, was an artist known to, I guess, release music independently without the help of big labels or rather the music industry. He was especially particular of who he collaborated with, especially particular of working with a company that controlled his music. He rejected all of that. Hence, when Columbia Records decided to release a Lil Peep posthumous album, many said it was exploitation of a young, promising artist's legacy. And there really is an interesting argument here that, I guess on one side, people are saying that posthumous albums actually honour the late artist's legacy, and most of the times it does seem that way, with the bling and glamour that comes with the promotion of that album, right? But I would argue that this reasoning also implies that the artist's work that was released when he or she was living was not enough to keep a memory of them alive. Mm. And for me, that is kind of disheartening, right? Mm. Only when you pass away, then people really start appreciating you.
Yeah,
that's what I took from it.
Yeah, I think I'm with you on this. I think sometimes it should stop there. I mean, like the legacy of the artist sometimes. Like if it's not the style of song that they can have a say on, then I think they shouldn't release it because it's not their actual representation of their body of work.
I guess so. And this brings us back to our conversation on hologram concerts, yep. right? Is it ethical? Is it disrespectful? Should you just leave the dead to be... to rest in peace, for lack of a better word. Mm. Another example was Michael Jackson. His posthumous album, Michael, was full of unfinished songs. Sony Music put that together and they got some accusations and questions if a couple of the songs in the album were even Michael Jackson's voice. And among those accusations was Michael Jackson's own family. So I guess that says a lot, right? We're asking you, at the end of the day, do you think that posthumous albums are disrespectful, or are you on the other side? Do you think it really honours a late artist's legacy? We'd love to hear from you. Feel free to tweet us at BFM Radio on Twitter and Instagram. Also, WhatsApp 018-789-8899. Again, the question, are posthumous albums disrespectful or honouring a late artist's legacy? Coming up, we're talking about Spotify's new initiative, but first up, we have a tune.
Yep. So since we're talking about posthumous albums and stuff, so I thought it's quite apt to play this one from Otis Redding. It's the tune Sitting on the Dock of the Bay. And I did not know this, but it's the very first posthumous single ever to top the charts in the US. It went number 3 on the UK singles charts as well.
Nice.
I thought he released this song when he was alive. But anyway, enjoy this one. Otis Redding, Sitting on the Dock of the Bay, right here on The Pulse, BFM 89.9.